Picture this. You've just spent, the better part of your weekend stuck in CAD software.
Oh, I know exactly where this is going.
Right. You've been measuring, tweaking, just perfectly designing this custom phone mount for your car dashboard.
Yep, the classic weekend project.
Exactly. So you boot up your 3D printer, you load up a fresh spool of that brightly colored PLA filament that you love, and you hit print.
And you watch that first layer like a hawk.
Oh, absolutely. You watch that critical first layer go down on the glass, and it is like absolutely flawless.
Which is the best
It
feeling?
really is. So you wait patiently, you
Yeah.
check on it a few times, watching it build up line by line, and finally, the extruder parks itself. It's done.
Success.
Success. It looks pristine sitting there on the build plate. I mean, the dimensions are exact, the curves are
So
smooth.
you pop it off.
Yeah, you pop it off, you take it out of your car, you slide it right into the air vent, mount your phone, and it feels like a total victory.
You are a maker. You made a thing.
Right. You've essentially conjured a physical object out of thin air to solve a very specific problem in your life. But then, and here's the catch, Monday rolls around.
The dreaded
You
Monday.
drive to work, and you leave your car parked in the sun for like one single summer afternoon.
Just one. That's all it takes.
You come back at 5 o'clock, you open the car door, and your perfect, precision-engineered phone mount has completely surrendered to the elements.
Just a sad little puddle of plastic.
It's drooped, it's warped into this miserable U-shape. Your phone is now resting somewhere near your gear shift, and your beautiful print has basically turned into a useless piece of modern art.
Yeah, it's a familiar, just deeply painful picture for anyone who has been in this hobby for more than, a few months.
It really is.
Oh, it's practically a rite of passage. I think every single person who owns a 3D printer has a box somewhere full of melted, warped, or just snapped PLA parts.
I definitely have a whole drawer full of them.
Right, we've all been there. You hold this sad, twisted piece of plastic in your hands, and you have this harsh realization.
That the material you thought was so rigid is actually super fragile.
Exactly. It's incredibly fragile the second the environment changes. That is the exact moment when you hit the wall. You hit the absolute physical limits of what standard PLA can do for you.
And that melting plastic is basically the universe telling you it's time to graduate. And that's exactly what we are doing today in this deep dive.
Taking the training wheels off.
Yes, today we're taking the training wheels off. We're digging into the materials that actual engineers use to build things that survive the real world.
Because when you hit that PLA ceiling, it's time to map out the jump to heat-resistant and impact-resistant technical filaments.
Which is exactly our mission today. We've got an incredibly detailed stack of research today from Monday Hub and Printara
You see,
3D.
really great source material.
Yeah, really good stuff. And we are going to unpack the classic industrial step-up, which is ABS, and then we're going to explore its highly specialized all-weather cousin, ASA.
We're going to break down the actual polymer chemistry, the mechanical numbers, the specific printing requirements, and build a complete decision framework for your next functional project.
So to really appreciate why these technical materials exist, I mean, we have to look closely at the thermal reality of what most people are printing with right now.
Right, which is standard PLA, polylactic acid.
Yeah.
And it is a phenomenal material. I mean, it's plant-based, it's stiff, and it prints like a dream. But it has a very specific, undeniable thermal weakness.
The heat.
The heat. It starts softening, entering what material scientists call its glass transition phase at around 50 to 60 degrees Celsius.
Which honestly doesn't sound that hot until you start measuring the world around you.
Exactly. A car interior parked in the sun on a typical summer day routinely exceeds 60 degrees Celsius.
It's like an oven in there.
It becomes a literal greenhouse. The ambient air gets tracked, the dashboard absorbs the radiant heat directly from the sun, and the temperature skyrockets.
So leaving a PLA part behind the glass of a parked vehicle is just a guaranteed way to twist it into a completely useless shape.
Within a matter of hours, the plastic polymer chains literally start to uncoil and slide past each other under the force of gravity.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the precise threshold where you need materials with serious structural thermal properties.
I really like to think of PLA as training wheels for 3D printing, It's brilliantly designed to get you comfortable with the machine.
It's very forgiving.
Super forgiving. It's cheap, it doesn't smell, it sticks to almost any build surface without much fuss.
And it's perfect for decorative prints, little statues, or prototype models that just sit on your desk.
Right, it gets you balanced and moving. But when you need to take your projects off the driveway and out onto the actual road, like when you're printing functional tools, drone chassis parts, automotive accessories. You need a material built for the rough terrain.
Training wheels aren't going to survive a mountain trail.
No, they'll snap right off.
You're stepping out of the realm of pure aesthetics and entering the realm of mechanical engineering. You are now asking your parts to do actual work, to bear loads, and to resist environmental stress.
There's a whole different ball game.
It is. And for decades, long before desktop 3D printing even existed, the absolute baseline standard for functional plastic parts in traditional manufacturing has been ABS.
ABS. I mean, we interact with it every single day. It's the plastic housing on your computer monitor. It's inside your car interior.
It's literally the plastic that Lego bricks are made out of.
Oh, which is why stepping on a Lego hurts so much. The stuff just does not break.
Exactly.
But what actually is it at a molecular level? Let's break down the chemistry here, because our sources highlight that the name ABS isn't a brand name. It's essentially a recipe.
It is a chemical ingredients list. ABS is an acronym that stands for acrylonitrile butadiene styrene.
Okay. That's a mouthful.
It is. But in material science, we classify it as an amorphous thermoplastic. And that word, amorphous, is really important for understanding how it behaves when we try to melt it in a 3D printer.
Okay, let's pause right there. Because for the listener who doesn't have a material science degree, what does amorphous actually mean when we're talking about plastic?
Okay, imagine a bowl of cooked, tangled spaghetti.
Okay, I'm with you.
The long noodles are all woven around each other randomly, right? Without any strict pattern. That's what the polymer chains inside an amorphous plastic like ABS look like.
Oh, interesting.
Because they are tangled so randomly, when you heat them up, they don't all melt at one specific sudden temperature.
So they don't just instantly turn to liquid.
Exactly. Instead, they gradually soften over a wide temperature range. They get slowly more and more gooey. This is completely different from a semi-crystalline plastic, like nylon, where the polymer chains are stacked neatly together like freshly chopped logs.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, crystalline plastics stay totally solid until they hit their melting point, and then they suddenly turn into a liquid puddle.
So the fact that ABS is amorphous, this tangled bowl of spaghetti, is what makes it printable. You can heat it up so it's soft enough to push through a nozzle, but it doesn't instantly turn to water.
Precisely. It holds a shape while it cools.
That makes a lot of sense.
It has a broad softening zone, which makes it workable. Now, back to the ingredients. The real magic of ABS is that it's a tripolymer. It's made of three specific monomers, the acrylonitrile, the butadiene, and the styrene.
So it's like a polymer cocktail.
Exactly. And each of those three components brings a highly specific superpower to the final material.
Let's look at the breakdown then. The A is acrylonitrile. What is that doing in the mix?
Acrylonitrile is the component that delivers the chemical resistance and the high heat deflection. It's basically the protective armor of the material.
So it takes the heat.
Right. It gives the plastic its ability to withstand higher temperatures without immediately losing its structural integrity. And it also protects the part from breaking down when it comes into contact with greases, oils, and certain harsh chemicals.
Okay. So that's the heat shield. Then we have the B, butadiene. Now, I'm looking at this and thinking about car tires. Isn't butadiene the primary ingredient in synthetic rubber?
You nailed it.
Is that where the impact resistance comes from?
It is literally synthetic rubber. See, standard rigid plastics can be incredibly strong, but they're often brittle.
Right, like they just snap.
Exactly. If you hit them with a hammer, the kinetic energy has nowhere to go, so the material experiences brittle fracture. It shatters like glass.
Ouch.
The butadiene in ABS acts as a microscopic shock absorber distributed throughout the plastic.
So it gives the material just enough flexibility to take a hit without snapping.
Right. It absorbs the kinetic energy of an impact, allowing the material to flex microscopically and deform slightly rather than cracking.
It's the source of that legendary Lego brick toughness.
Yes. And finally, we have the S, styrene.
What does the styrene do?
Styrene provides the rigidity and makes the material processable. Rubber on its own is obviously too soft, and acrylonitrile is difficult to mold.
So it brings it all together.
Exactly. Styrene is what allows the whole mixture to be melted down smoothly, injected into industrial molds, or, in our case, extruded cleanly through a tiny 0.4 millimeter 3D printer nozzle layer by layer.
Wow.
It brings the glossy finish and the structural spine to hold everything together once it cools.
So you mix the heat shield, the rubber shock absorber, and the rigid structural spine, and you get ABS.
It makes total sense why it's the undisputed king of industrial manufacturing.
Italy does.
But let's talk about the physical weight for a second, because when people think of tough, heat-resistant engineering materials, they often picture heavy metals or dense composites.
Oh, for sure.
But our Monday Hub research cites the specific density numbers.
Yes. The data places the density of standard ABS in a range from 0.9 to 1.53 grams per cubic centimeter, depending on the exact industrial blend.
And that has a median right around 1.07 grams per cubic centimeter.
Help us visualize that. What does 1.07 grams per cubic centimeter actually feel like in the hand compared to other things we know?
Well, pure water is exactly 1.00 gram per cubic centimeter. So ABS is only marginally heavier than water. It will sink, but just barely.
Wow, that is light.
Yeah. Compare that to aluminum, which is around 2.7 grams per cubic centimeter, or steel, which is up near 8. ABS falls firmly into the category of lightweight structural plastics.
So you are getting a massive amount of strength, impact resistance, and heat deflection without adding a massive amount of mass to your project.
Which is key for so many projects.
I can see why the drone community and the robotics guys love this stuff. You want your drone chassis to survive a crash, but you don't want it to weigh so much that your battery dies in 3 minutes.
Exactly. It's the strength to weight ratio that makes it so incredibly valuable in automotive and aerospace applications. You want to keep the overall mass of the machine down to improve fuel or battery efficiency, but the parts still need to survive real-world forces.
That brings us to the core reason we are abandoning our melted PLA foam mount in the first place, right? Heat resistance.
The heat.
We established that PLA surrenders at around 50 to 60 degrees Celsius. Where does ABS draw the line in the sand?
Manufacturer technical documentation universally puts the glass transition temperature of ABS right around 105 degrees Celsius.
105.
Yes. That is the theoretical threshold where the amorphous polymer chains start to get too much thermal energy and the material fundamentally begins to soften and lose its rigid structural integrity.
105 degrees Celsius. I mean, that's past the boiling point of water. We are talking about nearly double the heat tolerance of standard PLA.
It's a massive fundamental jump in capability. It completely changes the landscape of what you can build.
Yeah.
However, we have to talk about a critical engineering concept here regarding that 105 degree number.
Ah, the caveat. Because just because a spec sheet says 105 degrees doesn't mean I should design a custom bracket to hold a heavyweight inside an oven set to 104 degrees.
Correct. And this is where hobbyists often run into trouble when they start printing functional parts. 105 degrees is the point of obvious immediate failure. But in mechanical engineering, you have to account for something called creep.
Creep. Unpack that for us.
Creep is the slow, progressive deformation of a material under continuous mechanical stress over a long period of time, especially at elevated temperatures.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if you put an ABS part under a heavy physical load at 85 or 90 degrees Celsius, it won't melt instantly. But over days, weeks, or months, the polymer chains will slowly stretch and deform. The part will bend.
So the data isn't conclusively saying ABS is perfectly fine at 104 degrees forever.
Exactly. The maximum safe operating temperature for long-term load-bearing applications is always noticeably lower than the theoretical glass transition point. You always design with a safety margin. But even with that reality check, a part that can safely bear loads at 80 or 85 degrees Celsius is undeniably vastly superior to PLA. That temperature gap is the difference between a part that survives a summer in a hot car and a part that turns to absolute mush.
I want to push back here a little bit, though. I'm listening to this, and ABS sounds like a miracle material.
It does.
It's durable, it's lightweight, it completely solves the melting issue, and it's got these rubber shock absorbers built in.
Yeah.
If it's so vastly superior, why did the desktop 3D printing community default to PLA for the last 10 years? I mean, why isn't every single person just printing ABS by default?
Well, it's the ultimate trade-off in 3D printing. The answer comes down to the path of least resistance.
Ah, convenience.
Exactly. PLA became the undisputed king because it is unbeatably accessible and forgiving. It's incredibly easy to print. You can print PLA on a bare glass bed, on an open frame printer, sitting on a desk in a drafty garage, and 9 times out of 10, it will come out looking perfectly fine.
Because it doesn't shrink much as it cools.
Right, so it doesn't fight the printer.
It's cooperative. It actually wants to be printed.
Yes. ABS, on the other hand, fights back. Aggressively.
Oh, wow.
It has severe thermal contraction issues when it cools down from its printing temperature, which causes massive internal stress and warping. It requires specific enclosed hardware setups to print reliably.
Right, which we'll get to.
Yeah, we're going to dive deep into the physics of how to tame that warping later on. But beyond the printing difficulty, ABS has a hidden, fatal flaw that forced the industry to look for an alternative.
So we've established ABS is practically invincible indoors. It can take a hit, it can take the heat, but nature has a way of finding a material's single weak point. If you take that perfectly indestructible ABS bracket and mount it to the roof of your car or attach it to the side of your house, you've basically just initiated a ticking countdown clock.
You really have. You're shifting the battleground entirely.
Yeah.
Inside, the enemy is heat. Outside, the enemy is radiation.
Ah.
ABS has a profound fatal weakness when it is exposed to the sun. It simply cannot survive prolonged outdoor exposure without destroying itself.
Let's explore the physics of that because it seems so counterintuitive to me. We just talked about how tough it is, how it's used for industrial parts. Why does a little bit of sunlight tear it apart?
It all traces back to that three-part chemistry cocktail we broke down earlier. Think back to the B in ABS, the butadiene.
Right, the synthetic rubber,
yeah.
The microscopic shock absorbers.
Precisely. That specific chemical component is incredibly sensitive to ultraviolet radiation. The sun is constantly bombarding the Earth with UV photons. These photons carry a specific high level of energy.
Okay.
And it just so happens that the energy level of a UV photon is perfectly tuned to attack the double carbon bonds present in the butadiene polymer chains.
Wait, really? So the UV light isn't just heating it up, it's actively dismantling it at a molecular level.
Exactly. It's a chemical reaction called photooxidation. When UV photon strikes the butadiene, it possesses enough raw energy to literally sever those double bonds. This creates highly reactive molecules called free radicals within the plastic. These free radicals then react with oxygen in the air, triggering a cascading chain reaction that tears the polymer apart from the inside out.
That's wild. It makes me think of, like, the butadiene in ABS is like the steel rebar inside a concrete pillar. It gives the structure massive flexible puffiness.
That's a good way to look at it.
But UV light is like salt water seeping into that concrete. It actively rusts the rebar. The concrete might look fine from a distance, but its internal structural integrity is just rotting away.
That's a phenomenal analogy. A material is rotting chemically. Visually, the first sign of this photooxidation is yellowing. A nice white or brightly colored ABS part will turn a sickly, chalky yellow within just a few months of direct sun exposure.
Yikes.
But the cosmetic damage is really just the canary in the coal mine.
Because the real problem is structural.
Yes. The surface becomes incredibly brittle. The butadiene, your shock absorber, has been chemically destroyed on the surface layer. That legendary impact resistance drops to almost zero. Yeah, a part that would easily survive a drop onto a concrete floor straight off the printer will suddenly shatter like thin glass under the smallest load after spending a summer outside.
That's a complete disaster for functional parts. I mean, if you print a custom mounting bracket for an outdoor security camera out of ABS, it might hold the camera perfectly fine for the first 3 months.
Sure.
But a strong gust of wind in November or a bird simply landing on the camera could snap the bracket right off. And suddenly your expensive electronics are smashed on the driveway.
Exactly. You'd be facing constant part failure. And this is exactly where the 3D printing industry and the plastics industry as a whole had to engineer a solution. You can't have outdoor equipment falling apart.
Right.
So they created ASA. ASA was developed specifically as the chemical answer to the UV problem.
ASA. So what does that stand for? And how does it fix this rotting rebar issue?
It stands for acrylonitrile styrene acrylate. It is a brilliant surgical bit of chemical engineering.
Okay, lay it on me.
ASA solves the UV degradation problem by simply excising the vulnerable component entirely. They take the ABS recipe and they remove the butadiene. In its place, they substitute an acrylate elastomer.
Oh, so we swap the B for an A, we swap the butadiene rubber for an acrylate rubber.
Exactly. The acrylate elastomer serves the exact same mechanical purpose it acts as the rubbery shock absorber to prevent brittle fracture.
Right.
But chemically, acrylate does not have the vulnerable double carbon bonds that butadiene has.
So the UV photons hit the acrylate, but there's nothing for them to sever.
The photons hit it and nothing happens. The acrylate is vastly more UV stable. Because of the single chemical substitution, ASA parts completely ignore the sun.
That is amazing.
Yeah, they maintain their original color, their gloss, and most importantly, their mechanical strength and dimensional stability throughout years of harsh outdoor exposure.
Let me build on that rebar analogy then. ASA essentially swaps that rust-prone steel rebar out for a carbon fiber mesh.
Ooh.
It does the exact same structural job. It gives the concrete its toughness, but it simply cannot rust. The salt water, or in this case, the UV light, has zero effect on it.
It's an elegant solution. The Monday Hub and Printara 3D sources both emphasize this, where an ABS part will show severe visible and structural damage after just a few months of weathering outside. An identical part printed in ASA will retain its look and function easily after months and years in the exact same conditions.
But anytime you engineer a new solution, you know, there's always a trade-off. We remove the original rubber. What did it cost us?
Wow.
Let's get into the actual numbers. If I have a spool of ABS and a spool of ASA on my desk, how do they actually compare mechanically?
They are incredibly close siblings. The trade-off is remarkably small. Let's look at tensile strength first. Tensile strength is essentially measuring how much sheer pulling force a part can take before it gets stretched to the point of breaking.
So like hanging a heavy weight from a printed hook.
Right. According to the testing data, ASA tensile strength sits right around 33 megapascals.
Hold on, 33 megapascals, for the listener who doesn't spend their day looking at engineering charts. What does that actually look like in the real world? Are we talking about the force needed to snap a pencil or the force to tow a car?
Good question. 1 megapascal is roughly equivalent to 145 pounds of force per square inch.
Okay.
So 33 megapascals is nearly 4,800 pounds of force per square inch of cross-sectional area. Now, because 3D printed parts have layer lines and aren't perfectly solid blocks like injection molded plastic, you never get the absolute maximum theoretical strength, but it tells you the base material is incredibly strong.
Right, that is wild.
You could comfortably design a small hook out of ASA that could hold a grown adult's weight, provided the print orientation was correct.
And how does that 33 megapascals compare to standard ABS?
Standard ABS typically ranges from 30 to 40 megapascals, depending heavily on the specific manufacturer's formulation. So ASA is right dead center in the exact same weight class.
What about heat? Did swapping out the butadiene ruin the heat deflection we love so much about ABS?
Not at all. The thermal properties remain excellent. Based on pre-cement technical data cited in the sources, ASA can withstand temperatures up to 93 degrees Celsius before showing signs of deformation under load.
Okay, so slightly lower.
Yeah, this is slightly lower than the theoretical 105 degree glass transition of ABS. But 93 degrees Celsius is still almost 200 degrees Fahrenheit. It is vastly superior to PLA and more than enough to survive direct summer sun, a hot car interior, or an enclosure housing warm electronics.
And what about the toughness? The shock absorption?
Yeah.
We know ABS is legendary for taking a hit. Does the acrylate rubber in ASA perform, as well as the butadiene rubber?
This is measured by something called the IZOD impact strength test.
Describe that test for us. How do they actually measure toughness in a lab?
It's actually a very brutal mechanical test. They take a standardized rectangular block of the plastic and they cut a small V-shaped notch into one side of it to create a weak point.
Okay.
They clamp the block upright in a vise. Then a heavy metal pendulum on a swinging arm is dropped from a specific height. It swings down and smashes into the plastic block.
So they are literally hitting it with a hammer to see how much energy it takes to snap it.
Exactly. The machine measures how much kinetic energy the pendulum loses when it breaks through the plastic. The more energy lost, the tougher the plastic was. This is measured in joules per meter.
And the numbers.
For ABS, the IZOD impact values vary wildly, typically from 200 to 400 joules per meter.
Why such a massive range? I mean, why isn't it just one number?
Because of the recipe factor. Chemical companies tweak the ratios of the A, the B, and the S to prioritize different things.
Oh, that makes sense.
Some ABS blends are formulated to flow really quickly for high-volume injection molding, while others are formulated specifically for maximum impact resistance.
And what about ASA? Where does it fall in the pendulum test?
Here we run into an interesting quirk of the 3D printing industry. The data is simply not conclusive on a single universal IZOD number for ASA. Different filament brands use vastly different proprietary formulations.
So it's all over the place.
Yeah, some manufacturers use a higher percentage of the acrylic rubber, which might lower the absolute impact resistance slightly, but dramatically improves how easily it prints on a desktop machine. Others prioritize pure toughness.
So you can't just point to a chart and say, you know, this is the definitive toughness of ASA across the board. It depends on whose spool you buy.
Precisely. But the crucial takeaway is that while the exact number varies by brand, ASA generally competes extremely closely with ABS in terms of taking a shock.
Okay, good.
It's not a fragile, glass-like alternative. It is a robust technical engineering plastic. The mechanical differences between ABS and ASA often fall within the normal manufacturing variances between different brands anyway.
So the overarching narrative here is that mechanically, they are basically twins. Mm. The massive defining difference, the reason you choose one over the other, is that ASA is practically immune to the sun, and ADS is violently allergic to it.
That is the dividing line.
Which brings us perfectly to the practical application. We've explored the deep chemistry, we know why the chains melt, we know why the rebar rusts. Now we need to synthesize all this theory into an actionable framework.
Right, the real-world application.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is the decision guide. For the listener sitting in front of their slicer software right now trying to decide which spool to order, how do we make this choice black and white?
It's a very straightforward decision tree once you isolate the environmental variables your finished part is going to face. You start by asking one simple question. Will this part live outside?
Okay, let's look at the ASA column first, the outdoor champion.
You select ASA when the object you are printing is going to spend its life outdoors, exposed to UV radiation from the sun, rain, wind, and wide seasonal temperature cycles.
Right.
If the sun is going to hit it regularly, you must choose ASA. It is non-negotiable if you want the part to last.
Give me some concrete examples from our sources. What are makers actually building with this?
Automotive exterior components are the classic use case. If you're printing custom mirror housings for your truck, or replacement grille pieces, or a specialized mount for an off-road light bar.
Oh, yeah.
Actual automotive manufacturers have been injection molding exterior car parts out of ASA for decades precisely because of its UV stability. It won't bleach out and turn brittle after 2 years on the road.
What about non-automotive stuff? Things around the house.
Outdoor enclosures for electronics are huge. Say you're building a custom weather station or a box to hold IoT sensors for your garden or a custom mounting bracket for a security camera under your eave.
All those smart home gadgets.
Exactly. With ABS, the housing would yellow, turn brittle, and eventually crack, exposing your electronics to the rain. With ASA, that housing will look brand new and remain watertight years later.
That's so critical.
The sources also mentioned drone components. If you are building a custom quadcopter, it's going to be flying in direct sunlight. You need dimensional stability regardless of the weather. ASA is the clear winner. Even something as simple as a custom house number plate for your front porch. If you print it in white ABS, it will look terrible by next summer. White ASA stays stark white.
It's the ultimate set it and forget it outdoor material. But that leads to an obvious question. If ASA does literally everything ABS does mechanically, but it also survives the outdoors, why would anyone ever buy ABS again?
That's a fair question.
Has ABS basically become an obsolete legacy filament for desktop printing?
That's a very logical conclusion to draw, but it misses a crucial factor in the hobbyist and professional workflow. Economics.
Ah, the price tag.
You stick with ABS when you are making functional parts that need high heat resistance and toughness, but where UV exposure is absolutely not a factor because it's cheaper.
So parts that stay indoors but get hot.
Exactly. Think about functional prototypes for workshop jigs or brackets that hold electronics inside a larger machine or structural components for the 3D printer itself. The sources specifically highlight the Voron printer community.
Oh, the open source high performance DIY printers.
Yes. Voron printers are incredibly fast, enclosed machines built largely from 3D printed structural parts. Those printed parts operate inside a heated printer chamber that routinely sits at 50 to 60 degrees Celsius for hours on end.
Wow.
PLA would soften and cause the whole printer frame to warp. But because those parts are entirely enclosed inside a room, they never, ever see UV light. ABS is the absolutely perfect material for that application.
But again, if ASA works just as well, why not use ASA for those printer parts just to be safe?
Because of the premium you pay for the acrylate elastomer, the sources note that ABS is generally 10 to 20% cheaper per spool than ASA.
Which doesn't sound like much for one spool, but it adds up.
It adds up massively. If you're building a Voron, you're printing dozens of large, dense structural parts. If you are doing iterative prototyping for a product design, you might print the same bulky part 5 times to get the tolerances right, throwing the previous versions in the recycling bin.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Paying a 20% premium for UV protection that the part will literally never experience is a waste of money. Cost at scale matters.
That makes perfect sense. Don't pay for the all-weather tires if the car is never leaving the indoor track. Now, beyond the cost and the sun, there's another major factor that makes both of these materials incredibly desirable for makers. and it happens after the print is completely finished.
The post-processing.
Yes, the post-processing.
Yes, this is a distinct shared advantage for both ABS and ASA compared to almost any other desktop filament. Both of these plastics are highly soluble in acetone.
Acetone, like the heavy-duty nail polish remover or paint thinner you buy at the hardware store.
Exactly. Because the chemical structure of these plastics is highly reactive to the acetone solvent, it opens up a world of professional-level finishing techniques.
Let's talk about vapor smoothing. I've seen videos of this, and it looks like pure magic. How does it physically work?
Acetone vapor smoothing is a process where you expose your raw 3D printed part to the fumes of liquid acetone inside an enclosed container. You don't dip the part in liquid, you suspend it above it.
Okay.
The liquid acetone evaporates at room temperature, filling the container with vapor. That vapor condenses onto the surface of your printed part.
And what happens when the vapor hits the plastic?
The acetone solvent chemically attacks the outermost microscopic layers of the polymer. It essentially melts them back into a liquid state temporarily.
Oh, wow.
The distinct ridges of the 3D printed layer lines dissolve and flow into each other, creating a perfectly continuous surface.
So you pull the part out, let the acetone flash off and evaporate, and the plastic hardens again.
Right. And you are left with an incredibly smooth, high-gloss finish that looks completely injection molded. For cosplay armor, product design prototypes, or highly visible consumer parts, this process is invaluable. It completely eliminates the need for hours of tedious sanding, priming, and painting.
Which is a huge relief, because trying to sand PLA is a nightmare. I've tried it. The friction from the sandpaper heats up the PLA, the plastic gets gummy, it ruins the sandpaper immediately, and you end up tearing chunks out of the model.
PLA's low glass transition temperature makes it very difficult to sand mechanically. ABS and ASA, because of their higher thermal stability, don't gum up as easily if you do need to wet sand them.
But the vapor smoothing is really the true killer feature.
It is. You do have to be careful, though, because you are fundamentally melting the outer surface. Sharp corners and fine embossed details will round off and soften slightly. It's a trade-off between absolute dimensional accuracy and surface finish.
Are there other tricks you can do with acetone besides just making the part shiny?
Absolutely. Because acetone actively dissolves the polymer chains, you can use it to create something the community calls ABS juice, or ASA slurry.
Slurry. That sounds appetizing. What is it?
It's incredibly useful. You take scrap pieces of your filament failed prints or support material, and you drop them into a small glass jar with a splash of acetone. Over a few hours, the acetone completely dissolves the plastic, leaving you with a thick, colored paste.
And you use this paste as a glue.
It's significantly better than glue. Glue relies on mechanical adhesion. It just sticks to the surface of two parts. When you apply this acetone slurry between two ABS or ASA pieces and press them together, the acetone in the slurry actively melts the surfaces of both parts.
So they fuse.
Exactly. The polymer chains from part A physically tangle with the polymer chains from part B. As the acetone evaporates, the plastic hardens into a single, continuous, solid piece.
You're not gluing them, you're chemically welding them together.
Exactly. It's a chemical weld. The joint is often just as strong, if not stronger, than the surrounding printed plastic. This is absolutely critical if you are building something massive, like a full-scale cosplay helmet, or a large drone frame that is simply too big to fit on your printer's build plate.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You can print it in four separate sections, chemically weld them together with slurry, and have a structurally sound final object.
So synthesizing the decision guide. If the sun, the rain, and the seasons are going to hit the part, you must choose ASA. If the part lives indoors, needs high heat deflection, and you want to save 20% on material costs, stick with ABS.
Perfect summary.
And both materials give you the superpower to chemically smooth and weld your models.
That is the complete framework. If you understand that, you know exactly what to buy. But as we've alluded to several times now, deciding on the filament and clicking buy is the easy part.
Here we go.
The real trial begins when you try to get these industrial plastics to actually stick to your build plate without curling up into a miserable failed potato chip.
And this brings us to the most critical section of our deep dive, taming the print. We are going to cover the mandatory safety requirements, the hidden moisture issues that ruin your layer strength, the infamous warping physics, and we're going to deliver the single most important actionable tip you need to actually succeed with these materials.
We have to start with safety. This is non-negotiable. When you move away from PLA, you are leaving behind the sweet, vaguely waffle-like smell of melting cornstarch.
Right.
You are now heating up complex industrial chemicals. The technical documentation is very clear on this. Both ABS and ASA release volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, during the extrusion process.
And we specifically mentioned the S earlier, styrene.
Yes, styrene is the primary VOC released into the air when the plastic is melted at 250 degrees Celsius. Along with the VOC gases, the mechanical process of extruding the plastic also shears off ultrafine particles, or UFPs. These are microscopic bits of physical plastic floating in the air.
How microscopic are we talking?
Unbelievably small, often less than 0.1 microns in diameter. For context, a human hair is roughly 70 microns across. These particles are so small, they behave almost like a gas.
And what are the actual health risks of breathing this in? Because I know a lot of people have their 3D printers sitting right next to their keyboard in their home office.
That is exactly what you cannot do with ABS and ASA. Breathing in styrene fumes and high concentrations of UFPs can cause acute headaches, dizziness, nausea, and severe respiratory and eye irritation.
Yikes.
Long-term exposure in poorly ventilated areas is a serious occupational hazard. Multiple studies have shown that the concentration of ultrafine particles immediately around a printer running ABS is astronomically higher than the baseline levels in a normal room.
So the open-frame printer on the desk in the bedroom is completely off-limits for these materials.
Absolutely prohibited. Active ventilation or high-grade filtration is a hard requirement. Ideally, your printer should be located outside of your main living spaces in a dedicated workshop, a garage, or a technical room that has active exhaust ventilation pushing the air directly outside through a window or vent.
But realistically, a lot of hobbyists live in apartments. They don't have a dedicated garage workshop. If the printer has to be inside an office space, what's the solution?
Then you must use high-grade active air filtration directly on the printer. And it requires a two-part system. You need a true HEPA filter to physically trap the ultrafine particles, and you need a thick activated carbon filter to chemically scrub and absorb the volatile organic compounds like styrene.
Because the HEPA filter won't catch the gas, and the carbon won't catch the physical dust. You need both.
Exactly. Many modern enclosed printers are starting to ship with small carbon filters built in, which helps reduce the immediate odor around the machine. But you have to remember that those filters get chemically saturated over time and must be replaced regularly, otherwise they stop working entirely.
Do not take the safety aspect lightly.
Respect the chemistry.
Okay, we've secured the environment. The room is safe. What's the next physical hurdle before we even slice the model?
Moisture. Water is the invisible enemy of high-temperature filaments. Both ABS and ASA are mildly hygroscopic.
Hygroscopic meaning they actively pull moisture out of the ambient air and trap it inside the plastic.
Yes. They aren't quite as aggressively sponge-like as nylon, which can become unprintable in a matter of hours, but they absorb noticeably more moisture than PLA.
Okay.
If you leave a spool of ASA sitting out on a desk in a humid room or in a damp basement, it will start to soak up moisture within a few weeks.
So what? It's just a little bit of water inside the plastic. Why does that ruin a print?
Think about the physics of the printhead. You are feeding this filament into a tiny metal nozzle that is heated to 250 or 260 degrees Celsius. Water boils and turns to steam at 100 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, so it vaporizes.
Right. When that microscopic pocket of trapped water hits the melt zone, it instantly flashes into steam. The steam expands violently. You will actually hear it while you're printing. It makes a very distinct popping, crackling, or hissing sound as the plastic exits the nozzle.
It sounds like tiny little firecrackers going off inside your hot end.
That's exactly what it is. Miniature steam explosions. And those tiny explosions blast microscopic voids and bubbles into your extruded plastic line. Cosmetically, it looks terrible. It leads to severe stringing and a rough, pitted, cratered surface finish on the sides of your part.
Wow.
But mechanically, it's devastating.
Because those bubbles are interrupting the solid flow of the plastic.
Yes. It drastically reduces the contact area and the chemical adhesion between the printed layers. A part printed with wet filament will suffer from severe layer delamination. You can often pull the layers apart with your bare hands.
Oh, that's awful.
Your highly engineered, impact-resistant structural part becomes weak, brittle, and totally useless.
So how do we guarantee the filament is dry?
Active drying is essential. You cannot just put it in a Ziploc bag and hope for the best once it's wet. You need to invest in a dedicated filament dryer. or use a heavily modified food dehydrator that can hold low, precise temperatures.
Right.
Baking these skulls at around 65 to 80 degrees Celsius for 4 to 6 hours will safely drive the moisture out of the polymer matrix without melting the plastic onto the spool.
And once it's dry, you have to keep it dry.
For long-term storage, the spools must be kept in sealed, airtight dry boxes loaded with silica gel desiccant. If you have a perfectly dialed-in print profile that suddenly starts giving you ugly, stringy results with weak layers, don't mess with your slicer settings. Drying the filament is always the absolute first diagnostic step.
Okay, we've filtered the air, we've baked the water out of the filament, we are finally ready to hit print, and immediately we run into the final absolute boss fight of ABS and ASA warping.
Warping is the single most common reason hobbyists throw their hands up in frustration and go back to printing PLA. It is relentless.
It really is.
And to defeat it, you have to understand the thermal physics of what is happening line by line on your build plate.
Break it down for us. Why does the part refuse to stay flat? Why does it curl up at the edges?
It fundamentally comes down to thermal contraction. When the printer extruder melts ABS or ASA, it's heating the polymer up to around 250 degrees Celsius to make it flow.
Okay.
As the nozzle moves and lays down a hot line of plastic, that plastic immediately begins transferring its heat to the surrounding air, trying to reach room temperature.
And as physical materials cool down, they shrink.
They contract. And these specific polymers contract aggressively. Now imagine a solid printed cube. The lowest layers of that cube are stuck directly to your heated build plate. Because the bed is hot, those bottom layers stay warm, and therefore they stay physically expanded.
But the layers further up?
The upper layers are exposed to the cooler ambient air in the room. They cool down rapidly, and as they cool, they shrink. This creates a massive, invisible internal physical stress within the object itself.
The internal pull.
The shrinking upper layers are acting like a rubber band, literally pulling upwards and inwards, trying to rip the lower layers away from the glass.
It's actively fighting itself. And eventually, that upward pulling force from the shrinking top layers becomes stronger than the physical grip the bottom layer has on the build plate.
Exactly. The corners of the print are the most vulnerable points of leverage. The internal stress finally overcomes the bed adhesion, and the sharp corners lift off the bed.
And then it's game over.
Once a sevel corner lifts, the thermal gradient gets even worse, the internal stress increases, and the entire part peels up, curling into a U-shape, or sometimes detaching from the bed completely and creating a massive bird's nest of plastic mid-print.
So the enemy is thermal contraction causing internal stress. How do we beat physics? This brings us to the most important moment of the deep dive. We are pausing right here to deliver the key tip. Listener, if you tune everything else out and take only one actionable rule away from this entire conversation to apply to your printing this week, this is it.
To successfully print ABS or ASA without catastrophic warping, you must do two things simultaneously. You must set your heated build plate to 100 to 110 degrees Celsius, and you absolutely must use a fully enclosed printer chamber.
I'm going to repeat that.
Yep.
Because it is the golden rule of technical printing. Your bed must be at 100 to 110 degrees Celsius, and you must use an enclosure, period.
If you attempt to print a solid, functional part, really anything larger or denser than a simple phone case on an open-frame machine sitting on a desk, the corners will warp. It is not a matter of if, but when.
It's guaranteed.
The temperature difference between the 100-degree heated bed and the 20-degree room air is simply too extreme. The thermal shock is too violent.
Think of it like this. Trying to print these high-temperature, highly reactive plastics without an enclosure is exactly like trying to bake a delicate, highly complex pastry in your oven, but leaving the oven door wide open the entire time.
I love that analogy. Let's expand on that.
You might have the electric heating element at the bottom of the oven cranked up to the perfect temperature, just like your 110-degree heated bed. But because the door is wide open, cold, chaotic air is constantly rushing in from the kitchen.
Right.
That draft of cold air hits the top of your pastry, the temperature gradient becomes wildly uneven, the structure experiences massive stress, and the whole thing collapses flat. You have to shut the oven door to trap the ambient heat and let the entire object bake evenly in a controlled environment.
That is exactly the physical function of the 3D printer enclosure. It's not just a box to keep the noise down. The enclosure traps the radiant heat rising off that 110-degree heated bed. It creates a stable, controlled microclimate around the part where the ambient air temperature sits comfortably, around 40 to 60 degrees Celsius.
So it dramatically reduces the shock.
Exactly. It drastically reduces the extreme temperature gradient between the freshly extruded 250-degree plastic and the surrounding air. Because the ambient air is 50 degrees instead of 20 degrees, the plastic cools down much, much slower.
Slower cooling means slower contraction.
Slower. Even cooling across the entire volume of the part means drastically reduced internal stress.
Mm-hmm.
The layers aren't violently pulling against each other, and with lower internal stress, your bed adhesion layer doesn't have to fight nearly as hard to keep the part locked down flat.
It's so vital.
The enclosure is not an optional luxury accessory for these materials. It is a fundamental requirement for success.
And what about that bed temperature? Why specifically 100 to 110 degrees? Why not 80?
That specific temperature band is critical because it keeps the foundational layers of the print hovering right near the glass transition point of the ABS or ASA. It keeps those bottom layers just slightly soft and pliable.
Oh, interesting.
This allows them to physically absorb and distribute some of the microscopic pulling stresses from above without violently snapping off the build plate.
Okay.
And when you combine that high heat with a dedicated adhesive surface like a textured PEI sheet or a thin layer of specialized glue stick, it creates a mechanical lock that can easily withstand the forces of the print.
So, to summarize the ultimate battle plan for printing these technical filaments. First, bake the water out and dry the filament. Second, guarantee your safety by ventilating the room or running heavy filtration. Third, shut the printer doors to trap the heat. Fourth, crank the bed to 110 degrees. And then finally hit print and watch the magic happen.
If you respect the chemistry and you follow that strict environmental protocol, you will tame ABS and ASA. You will completely transition your hobby from producing fragile, frustrating desktop toys to manufacturing incredibly durable, professional-grade functional parts that can survive the real world.
And that is exactly the journey we set out to map today. We started with a puddle of melted PLA in a hot car. And we've navigated the polymer chemistry and the thermal physics to find the actual engineering solutions. Let's do a quick final recap to lock all of this in for your next project.
Standard PLA remains your fast, extremely accessible choice for prototypes, decorative models, and highly detailed prints that will stay indoors and stay relatively cool. It is the perfect foundational material.
ABS steps in as your indoor heat and impact warrior. It's affordable, it's tough as nails, it absorbs shock, and it handles the high heat of a workshop machine with absolute ease. Plus, it smooths beautifully with acetone vapor.
And finally, ASA is your absolute uncompromising outdoor champion. It takes all the incredible mechanical strength and thermal benefits of ABS, but it surgically removes the UV weakness, allowing it to survive direct sun, rain, and the elements for years without degrading.
It is an incredible toolkit for any maker to have at their disposal. But honestly, we're only scratching the surface of the data here. If you want to dive even deeper into the exact tensile strength variations between brands, the specific slicer settings for bridging and overhangs, and review all the granular testing data we pulled from today.
For the full numbers, see printera3d.com.
Exactly. They have incredibly detailed, comprehensive guides that expand on every single metric we've discussed. But before we wrap up and sign off, I want to leave you with a provocative thought, a new threshold to ponder.
Let's hear it.
We've solved the 50-degree melting problem with PLA. We've solved the 90-degree heat and UV problem with ABS and ASA. But what happens when your project demands even more extreme performance?
Oh, that's a good question. What happens when you are tasked with designing a structural component for an actual car engine bay, or a gear for a high-stress industrial machine that continuously operates in environments above 95 degrees Celsius?
At that point, the rules of physics change yet again. Even our heavy-duty champions, ASA and ABS, will begin to creep, soften, and eventually fail. When you cross that 95-degree continuous operating threshold, you have to leave the consumer realm behind entirely.
You really do.
You have to start looking at highly specialized, exotic industrial materials.
You're entering the territory of polycarbonate, glass fiber reinforced nylons, or aerospace plastics like PEEK. And printing those materials requires entirely different industrial grade printer architectures.
Next level stuff.
We're talking about nozzle temperatures approaching 300 degrees Celsius and actively heated, not just enclosed, but actively heated printer chambers running at 100 degrees just for the ambient air. It is an entirely different level of thermal engineering.
It's the absolute deep end of the 3D printing pool. And who knows, maybe we'll take a deep dive into that crazy industrial world in a future conversation. But for now, you have the knowledge and the framework to conquer the heat, to beat the sun, and to start printing parts that truly last. Keep experimenting, keep pushing the physical boundaries of what your machine can do, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.